Hello, lovely podcast people. Welcome to episode 101. This episode is an annoying one, as usual, because I don't know whether it's a parenting podcast or a nutrition podcast. It's a bit of both. And the topic, as you may have seen, is, well, I'm going to say it like this. I don't know the exact topic at this point, but I do not think that people should be giving children squash. That'll be like the dun dun dun. That'll be the snippet that gets put on the internet. Oh, have you heard? Martin McDonald sold out. He's into the bro science now. He says you can't give children squash because they'll get addicted or it'll ruin their gut microbiota. No. I'm going to talk about this. And actually, there's loads of stuff I'm not going to talk about because with all your listener questions, I know you've got so many around artificial sweeteners, and I'll get to answering all of those things. So I'm not going to touch on those too much at the minute. And one thing is, developmental children are different to adults. And actually, specific to some of the stuff I'm going to talk about today, we can talk about some of the differences. But this is more a case of practical advice. I'm going to talk research as usual. And it comes from friends who just are struggling with children. People who have spoken to me, friends, kind of Instagram friends, acquaintances, whoever, different people, you know, very, very close friends who have struggled with big eaters. And I think I did mention this in a previous podcast, actually, and other places. So let me be clear. My stance is this, is that I think we should be delaying children's exposure. And I'm talking toddlers really here. Delay their exposure as long as is practically and reasonably possible from artificially sweetened drinks and even just some hyper sweet drinks as well. But I use squash. I should probably not just say squash. That's like cordial or diluting juice, depending on all the ridiculous terms that your geographical location has come up with this for this product. I should probably have one on screen here. But that's my stance. And this is moving away from this idea of, although children's eating from meal to meal can be very erratic, their calorie intake can be quite erratic, their 24-hour energy intake is fairly well regulated, all being well. And that's one reason I'm not talking about, I think, another point that I've mentioned before is milk. Drinking milk. So once you go from booby milk to potentially pumped or formula from a bottle milk, and even booby milk continuing. But, you know, I think I've said this elsewhere, the many, 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 many years that I was breastfed for, there's a clue for you. But giving too much milk essentially just quenches appetite as well as thirst. But then, oh, my child won't eat this food or that food, and it's just because they're full up of milk because it has lots of great calories. Likewise, it's quite sweet tasting, which a lot of people, oh, you know, the body gives babies milk and it's super high fat. Like, it has got some fat in it, fantastic, but it's also got lots of lovely sugar in it. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a different way that we can potentially create fussier eaters and maybe even change their preferences for certain foods and food types. Now, again, I'm not going to be talking about, there is idea, there's so many falsehoods and misinformation in this area, and we just don't know. There is a lack of research in children. There is an idea that maybe, and I'm on board with this, okay? I'm on board with the idea that there should be more research. It would be interesting, and I think a fruitful endeavor. There's lots of research out there that is pointless, and we're still spending hundreds, if not millions, of dollars, pounds, etc., money on silly studies when we don't need them. You know, low fat, low carb, which is better? Ridiculous. Stop spending money on that research. But this area is specifically related to children, whether or not maybe artificial sweeteners. And the fact that artificial sweeteners are also sometimes called non-nutritive sweeteners. So NNS, you might see, or ASS, or ASS for short. I wrote that in some notes the other day for someone and just chuckled to myself. When we eat ass, does it? Anyway, moving on. going on to my other Instagram account content there. So non-nutritive sweeteners, is the fact that we are giving that sweetness, which stimulates the those sweetness receptors in our body, but without the caloric load, are we dissociating sweetness from energy? And in doing so, are we creating this, like a disruption between calories and sweetness? And we have these sweet tastes in the mouth, but also throughout the gut as well. So is that then stopping us from appropriate signaling with appetite, food preference, food intake, these kind of things? So that's an interesting discussion that we should continue, but we just don't know currently. So people who tell you we do, they are lying. But yes, going back to this topic, the thing I'll say up front is, in children that are super young, toddlers, they don't know. Again, even with regards to very energy dense, highly ultra processed foods, junk food, they don't know these things exist. So we don't need to just keep offering them. They don't know they exist. We can just feed them stuff. We have good control. Once they get older, unfortunately, we have to be pragmatic in our approach. We don't want to be these kind of religious nutrition zealots where you can't eat this. And then, you know, the same way religious zealots go, you can't do this, you can't do that. And then their children go off to university and turn into absolute alcoholics and sluts. I can't believe I've said that. Don't, just chill out, okay? It's a joke. It, not all of them, just a lot of them, not even alcoholics, just drinking loads because they're out of mum and dad's sight, because they've not been allowed to do anything because of these extreme controls. It's not just religious, it's also just old-fashioned people. So, where was I? We need to be pragmatic. You don't have this, and then you know, it just doesn't create good relationships with food. But whilst they are just these like little hedonic animals running around, we have an element of almost complete control of their food environment and their exposure. So we don't need to be giving them. And again, there's this like, so sweetness, sweet taste, we have this inherent, we are born, inborn tendency and like towards sweet taste. And when we taste that sweetness, it activates these kind of brain centers that are our reward centers in the brain that are the same centers which drugs hijack. And these things are very good for us. We want to seek out that sweet taste. Different theories, I'm not sure how evidence-based, but it's like, oh, we seek out this sweet taste, food's high in vitamin C, blah, blah, blah. I'm not so sure about that. But certainly from a seeking out calories and energy that will sustain life is an important part of mammals. So, you know, drugs can hijack that. They then screw up some of the feedback loops, which are terrible. You get idiots like Mark Hyman saying, you know, two things. One, artificial sweeteners, they're 200 times, 600 times, 1,000 times, 10,000 times sweeter than sugar. That's true. But for that reason, we give thousands of times less amount of these things to just mimic sugar. So when we're trying to take the calories out of something, so it's not like we are stimulating the body 1,000 times more than we would with sugar. We're just kind of like for like matching them. These days, in this day and age where we have sugar tax, it's cheaper for companies to do the non-sugar versions. So I think it's Sprite who still have a little bit of sugar, and lots of companies, as they change consumers, they have a lot of power over us, the food industry. They will change our taste, so they will gradually reduce the salt in something so that we don't go, oh, that tastes disgusting now. They will change our taste the same way they'll do that with sugar and artificial sweeteners. Fortunately, they can use those to keep the taste similar for us. The other thing that Hyman and other Muppets say is this whole idea of sugar and artificial sweeteners being addictive. I think I've done an episode on this, is sugar addictive, somewhere, if you want to listen more about that. But it's, again, it's sometimes I'm not sure if it's people just not understanding or not being able to interpret animal research, or whether they are just, like Mark Hyman, definitely, he's a real sellout. He doesn't care. He knows lots of his information is, misinforms people, but carries on, whilst putting out other stuff that's correct, but, not a good person to listen to. But again, claiming that there's this addiction, and I'm not really going to go into that. There's no point in doing it again. And that's not what I'm really talking about here. But what I am talking about is the fact in a developmental situation, we aren't having the same discussion that we have with adults. And with adults, even studies. So we can likely increase, and that this can be seen somewhat in adults. You can do very low carbohydrate, very low fat diets, and that will tend to change preference. But for instance, there's a study, I can't remember the author, begins with M. And I think it's 2001. But obviously, as usual, all of the show notes are on the website, martin-macdonald.com/EP for episode EP101. And you'll see the show notes, the time points and the references. And they essentially gave children and adults sweet tasting drinks. It was like an orangeade or something and a sour tasting version, and did some tests in terms of how they could change taste preference. And children... in the sweet tasting group, essentially the plasticity, the changeability of their taste is already high. And sorry for my cough, I just got this irritating cough. I do apologize. Was such that they had this large, statistically significant increase in their preference towards the sweeter tasting foods. And we can see this versus sour, and even moving towards that way and giving them sour and only sour exposure didn't then move their taste towards this sour taste. So that's an important factor. And adults, it didn't seem to change it all that much in this study. Now, there's also other research, which I'm trying to think if I can remember any specifics for you, but essentially, children, begins with D, Dowenowski, 2012 paper, which is a really good paper. If you're interested in this area, it talks about lots of the nuances of this area. I've absolutely ruined the pronunciation of that author's name, but I can sort of see lots of the letters. Definitely ends in SKI, it's got a W, maybe a couple of N's in there, a DO to begin with. Anyway, but I will link that paper. It's really cool with regards to the nuance of this, and talks about essentially the fact that we still don't know really well, but we do know that children fed lots of sweet foods will increase their liking for these foods over time, and foods high in sugar. So this is where we're coming back to this topic that I'm talking about of squash. And very pragmatically and practically, I have seen parents giving children sweet drinks between meals and with meals, and then the children really struggling to want the more savory, the umami type tastes. And it really stands to reason that I've got this thing that tastes like the blood of unicorns. I don't know if the blood of unicorns tastes nice, but like unicorn juice. Again, that sounds weird. So just tastes like unicorns. Fairy dust. There we go. Fairy. That sounds less. Fairy dust tastes like heaven. There is no heaven. It tastes like something nice. I'm going off on one. I've just started. I was going to say tastes like cocaine for children, but there was a study which Mark Hyman references again, like artificial sweeteners show more addictive nature than cocaine, because we did this study in rats. Again, humans aren't rats. The interpretation of those studies is so poor. It's annoying, but it just makes headlines. Anyway. Giving your child these things between meals and then saying, look, sit down and eat this whatever, pasta, rice, carrots, chicken, just all these things that aren't these hugely sweet, nice, instantly rewarding tastes can create a struggle for parents. So while you can, keeping squash and super sweet drinks out of the diet is just a water first approach, if you will. It is difficult, I know, if you've already gone that down that road. I never want my podcast or my content to make anyone feel any guilt or shame or things like that. Unless you're Mark Hyman, then please feel guilty and shameful. But Tim Spector, that's you as well. But you can move towards a better place. Like, all is not lost. You know, it's not, you've not, it's just going to be a bit of like short-term effort, short-term pain for long-term gain. But if you can, if you're in a situation, if you're someone who listens to my stuff and is like, oh, one day I might be a parent, so I'm picking up on this stuff now, you're in the best situation. So the other thing I want to say with this, so a water-first approach, again, even in terms of tasting of foods, I've talked about some little bits in places, but just when your kids are really hungry, I do starters, and I will give them the, you know, oh, daddy, really hungry, like, okay, cool, do you want to just a snack first? Yes, cool. The snack is the vegetables that they're going to have with their main meal. So, and that brings me on, one, I've got this kind of increase in like, okay, there's hunger, they're going to eat those things, they're not going to shovel down the chips that I've made them, and then be less likely to have their olives or their carrots or their broccoli or whatever that I'm giving them with that meal. So I've got that in my favor. The other thing is, children are very, very led by familiarity and sweetness. So familiarity is a big driver with regards to food preference in children. And I actually did look for a study that I was thinking of just before I started recording. I couldn't find it, but I'll try and find it. But either way, kind of, it's well accepted. I can find your reference on the familiarity stuff. But you can use these two things in conjunction very well: sweetness and familiarity, the plasticity of their taste and the exposure method. So essentially what we're doing is combining foods that they like the taste of. And when kids get a little bit older, you don't want to be giving salt to little children, you know, babies and very small toddlers, but a teeny bit of salt as they're, you know, mine are now 6 and 8, whatever. A little bit of salt on broccoli or cabbage or whatever makes it taste loads better. A little bit of butter, a little bit of barbecue sauce that they tend to have maybe with their chicken or their chips or something like that can make those more bland foods taste much nicer. Now, I should probably do some stuff on baby-led weaning at some point, or even do a guest expert podcast on someone who's really good at the baby-led weaning. The whole, you know, messy play with food, feeling food, smashing their face, but really getting to know food can be really helpful, again, with regards to textures and familiarity. But even with older kids, if you haven't managed to do that, it then becomes a situation of, oh, okay, broccoli, I'm used to that, I'm used to seeing that, and then there's less barbecue sauce about, or yeah, all these different things. It just becomes a much more familiar experience for them, seeing those foods, eating those foods, they understand those foods. So you can use those two things. I will also say, there's this really weird study where essentially they gave pregnant mothers, carrot juice, loads of carrot juice, not loads and loads and loads, but just like daily carrot juice whilst they were pregnant, and then basically tested the taste preference during early weaning, and I think whilst they were breastfeeding they continued having the carrot juice, and they then did these taste tests towards the child's preference for carrots once they started to wean onto solid foods, and found these statistical significances with regards to the acceptance of babies with carrots, who in the group that had the carrot juice and those who hadn't. So again, it's just the methods of that study, if you are interested, again, I will link and will reference that study. It's super interesting. So there is also just this other thing, it just popped into my head, and it's like, you know, what you eat as a mother can have this impact. So if there's ever a reason for us to you know, be even better with our diets, with Ollie, actually he made the decision, wouldn't have any of these artificial sweeteners or anything like that in terms of the super sweet taste during that time. this phenomenal diet, and she is the most, you know, one of her first foods. When she was 10 months and starting to walk, I would cut up olives and hold them in my hand and then go, do you want an olive? And that was enough she liked olives that much, it was enough motivation for her to walk, and she took her first steps. Very funny. So, you know, there's these things that will probably never elucidate the exact mechanisms or be able to get great studies done on them, but there's these bits and bobs that we can do. And certainly the sweet taste is obviously this huge driver for behavior. You know, there's this big discussion like, is sugar addictive? No, it's not. It's ridiculous. Can it be slightly habit forming? Can it create this response and this feeling and stimulate these reward centers? Yes, it certainly can. And therefore we can do our best with regards to something that's mimicking those with the artificial sweeteners to maybe keep them out of the children's diet, as long as I said is reasonably and practically possible. I think that's most of what I wanted to say. I hope it's been helpful. I will obviously do social media posts on this if you want to ask questions. I think on Spotify now there is like a question part that you can ask questions on that I can maybe respond. It's not great because I don't think I can actually respond on Spotify, but any feedback you want to leave, but obviously the ratings, if you just hit the 5-star, if you think it's 5-star, if you don't, just don't bother. I'm joking, do what you want. Yeah, I hope that's helpful. I hope it's provided some insight. I hope those of you who want to geek out, I'll stick all the references down for you. And in future, I will go and then start discussing all of this stuff on, are they impacting the gut? Are they causing a release of insulin? Whenever I hear that, I'm just like, from people who are trying to be clever, oh, artificial sweeteners, when you have artificial sweeteners, they cause this insulin release. Yes, of course they do. That would be a real bad place if they actually did that. It would help all of these individuals going to comas. Hypoglycemic shock. So, I think that's it. I hope you've enjoyed it. Until next time, much love.